Welcome everybody to the 11th seminar in the London Seminar Series, co-sponsored by the Education Employers Task Force and the Centre for Education and Industry at the University of Warwick. Our speaker today is Dr. Stephen Jones from the University of Manchester. Stephen is Senior Lecturer in the School of Education, and he is pursuing some really interesting research in an aspect of employer engagement in education, which is a theme of the seminars, which has, I think, been historically rather rarely explored. So, with no further ado, I introduce you to Stephen Jones.
Thank you. Thank you for inviting me, Anthony, and thank you all for coming today. My title is Work Experience in the UK University Admission System, and what I'm doing today is comparing UCAS statements essentially according to school type, by which I mean whether the applicants are from independent schools, grammar schools, comprehensive schools, or sixth form colleges. Okay, the reason I'm looking at this is because there's been an increased focus in non-academic indicators in the UK university admission system. By non-academic indicators, I mean anything other than A-level grades or grades. The Brown Report last year noted that there's good evidence that for some students, exam grades alone are not the best predictor of potential to succeed at university. And that kind of evidence draws on a few studies, most recently Hoare and Johnson at Bristol University and Oxendars and Heath at Oxford University. And these studies show that if you track students with identical A-level grades through the system, then those from independent schools will generally be outperformed on average by those from state schools, even though their A-level grades are identical. David Willard seems to accept this argument, and his point is that British universities have always looked beyond A-level grades to other things, such as applicants' CVs, personal statements, and the potential to benefit from a particular course. And this interests me because, first of all, I'm not too sure about his list. He's got three things on this list. Applicants' CVs. Well, when you apply to university, you don't really submit a formal CV in the way that we do when we apply for a job. You complete the UCAS form, which has a series of character-limited fields about which school you went to and what your grades were, how old you are, your date of birth, etc. The potential to benefit from a particular course, again, there are no specific questions that say to candidates, how will you benefit from this particular course? The only way you can express or demonstrate your potential to benefit from a particular course is through the personal statement. And therefore, what David Willett is really talking about is personal statements, and there isn't much research at all on personal statements. The connection with work experience, and the reason that I'm giving this presentation today, is because work experience can, according to the Education Employers Task Force, can help young people make better informed decisions about university progression and provide material for use in UCAS personal statements and interviews demonstrating commitments to occupational areas linked in the course of studies. So one of the key reasons for having work experience is to decide which university programme you want to go on and also to get you onto that programme. The UCAS personal statement then. The advice you get on the UCAS website is that it's your opportunity to tell universities and colleges about your suitability for the course that you hope to study, demonstrate your enthusiasm and commitment, and above all it says ensure you stand out from the crowd. And I'm looking at how applicants go about interpreting this directive to ensure that they stand out from the crowd, which is a difficult thing to do, particularly in relation to their school and background. Previous research on personal statements is minimal, but there are a couple of studies. This one from 2000 investigated 176 successful applicants to a UK medical school, rated their personal statements according to different categories, so they rated it to see how good their personal statement was. Then they assessed each of the students' subsequent academic performance. They had lots of different measures of attainment, some of which were academic, some of which were to do with personality. And their conclusion's interesting. They said the personal statement isn't predictive of future performance at all. So the good personal statements don't result in good degree performance. Similar study by Norman in Australia, who described it as a highly dubious selection method. There are no studies that I was able to find that actually said the personal statement was a good indicator of future success. Of course, these studies are interested in how successful applicants will be. They're not interested in looking at the school type or the educational background. Publications about personal statements. You'll notice there's a pattern. They're mostly about medical training, medical courses. Almost all of the data gathered about personal statements relates to medical applicants because they're very interested in how good those students will be once they get to university. And there's no research in other areas. Okay, so the three research questions that I want to address today Number one, do personal statements differ according to the educational background of the applicant? That's the first thing I wanted to find out. Secondly, to what extent does school type correlate with the quantity and the quality of work experience cited in these personal statements? Is there a link? And the third question, would greater emphasis on the personal statement increase fairness in the admissions process, as David Willett and several other commentators and political figures have suggested? Okay, how did I collect data for this? Well, I took all 5,276 applicants to one school within one UK Russell Group university for 2010 entry. The host school that I chose is home to about 10 single honours undergraduate programmes and various joint honours combinations of the programmes. The next slide says all disciplines come under a humanities umbrella, social science rather than arts. So we're looking at economics, psychology, and criminology was one of them, sociology was one of them. And for the purpose of this research, all overseas applications were eliminated because I couldn't work out their school type, as were applications from mature students because, again, it was sometimes difficult to work out their schooling background and how that had affected their application. One of the important things that I wanted to do was control for academic attainment, so there was no point in comparing applications from students who were straight A students with those that got much lower grades. So what I decided to do was restrict the study to applicants who subsequently achieved A-level grades of BBB. That's a fairly arbitrary decision. I could have taken any grades, but I thought that was about average. Excluding general studies, so all of the personal statements that you'll see were written by applicants of the same academic ability or academic attainment anyway. When those 327 applications broke down, there were 87 personal statements from comprehensive schools, 83 of the applicants were from sixth form colleges, 45 were from grammar schools, 93 were from independent schools, and 18 of them were from other places like agricultural colleges, which I discounted. So that left me with 309 personal statements and about 200,000 words in total. Ethical considerations. I need to get ethical approval from my university for this, and they gave me the approval on the understanding that I wouldn't make the host university or the host school details public. Applicants' names are deleted at source, and when I'm citing text from a personal statement, which I will do soon, then key information is omitted to maintain anonymity as much as possible. Okay, UCAS personal statements. Someone was asking me a little bit about this a minute ago. UCAS applicants are given 4,000 characters or 47 lines in which to compose a free response. So you basically get a page to write whatever you want. There are several pages of advice, including a list of do's and don'ts, how-to video, mind map. You get snippets of advice on the UCAS website saying things like, a representative from Ulster Business School told us the presentation of the personal statements of critical importance to demonstrate use of English language and grammar. There are lots of websites that provide guidance, and some of them have got sample personal statements, and there are several how-to books that have recently appeared on the market as well. So there is information out there and available, and the UCAS website is very helpful. How did I go about analysing the personal statements? Well, the three categories. The first thing I looked at was the quality of the writing, because that's quite important, and essentially I looked at error analysis. The second category, which is the one I'm going to focus on most today, is work experience. I'm going to talk about how much they've got, the quality of it, and also the relevance of the work experience. And the third category, which is a catch-all category for everything else, commitments, goals, and awareness. I took these categories from a couple of the previous studies that I mentioned before, originally used by Palak in 1999. Okay, writing. I'm going to go through this quite quickly so I can get to the work experience stuff. What counts as an error? I basically went through all the personal statements and counted up the number of linguistic errors in each one. I was only interested in unambiguous meaning impairing errors. I wasn't interested in the prescriptive rules of grammar, so things like split and infinitives. I wasn't being fussy about that at all. My background's in linguistics, so I'm pretty familiar with the field of error analysis, and it is quite a well-established field. Four categories that I looked at: apostrophe misuse, typing and spelling errors, punctuation. Look, I've made a spelling mistake. That wasn't deliberate. And ungrammaticality. Apostrophe misuse, you can see some examples. I went through all of the personal statements then and counted them up. So you can see the four different kinds of school type, comprehensive, sixth form, grammar school, independent school, total number of apostrophe errors in all of them, and it's a bottom line that's most significant, the errors per 100,000 words. Don't forget, these students are of identical academic attainment. They got the same results in their A-levels, so there's no reason why they shouldn't be able to use the apostrophe. It's more revealing to me, it's more interesting to me, because it suggests that the level of advice and guidance that they're receiving is differing. And you can see there are two categories. Comprehensive schools, 0.68. Sixth form colleges, 0.73. So that's about four or five times more than the grammar school and the independent school applicants. And that pattern's repeated with typing and spelling errors. You can see that, again, it's about, for the first two categories, about four or five times more than the latter two categories. Punctuation errors. These are things like semicolons in the wrong place, or one sentence that should be two sentences, or two sentences that should be one sentence. And you can see the distribution is broadly similar. And there were some sentences which were just completely ungrammatical and made no sense. And I counted them. There were none of those in the grammar schools or independent school database. Okay, so when I counted them up and added them up, the total number of errors per 1,000 words of personal statement text is about 0.5 errors per 1,000 words for independent school applicants, slightly more for grammar school applicants, but a lot more for sixth form college applicants and comprehensive school applicants, which points in my mind to a lack of direction, a lack of guidance from those schools and those education establishments, rather than a lack of ability, because these are students of the same academic attainment. Okay, work experience. What the UCAS website says is include details of jobs, placement, work experience, or voluntary work, particularly if it's relevant to your chosen courses. So how do students go about this? Sorry, before I look at examples, the Education and Employers Task Force survey, which they undertook recently, it's interesting to me, they interviewed almost 1,000 young people, and they asked them the question, did the work experience that you undertook help you get into university? And the answer they got back was pretty categoric yes for 27%, and 8% said yes a lot. So work experience, these are students, young people looking back on their work experience and on their university application. They would now be graduates, and a lot of them, over a quarter of them, are saying the work experience did help them directly to get into university, and 8% saying a lot. Quantity of work experience was the first thing I looked at, because once I started reading through the personal statements, it was evident that some applicants were able to cite many more examples of work experience than others. Okay, this is an example from an applicant from an independent school. The applicant writes, as an 18-year-old, I've had a variety of short periods of experience in the working of businesses in today's financial world. I first became aware of the workings when, to supplement my savings, I worked for a company, a designer in London, as a model. I've also worked on the trading floor of a London broker's firm. My other work experience thus far includes work at my local BBC radio station, events planning with a corporate five-star country hotel, and working in the marketing team of a leading city law firm. I've since had a variety of jobs, most recently managing a small gastro pub. Okay, I think there's about 7 or 8 different experience sites. They're all quite high quality, high prestige kinds of work experience. I think that the most I found in any personal statement was about 11 or 12 different examples of work experience. On the other hand, when you look at the applicants from students from different educational backgrounds, you get things like this. In year 11, we were taken on a school trip to Cadbury World. During the day, we were given a presentation by the workers at Cadbury World to explain how they advertise, produce, and promote their new and existing products. I felt this was particularly valuable to my understanding of the business world. Or things like, from a sixth form college student, in the final GCSE year, there was an opportunity for a group of us to manage the school lockers. So in terms of quantity, some students are struggling to find one or two examples of work experience. When they do, it's mostly school-based work experience or school-organised work experience. I'll come back to that point later. Whereas other applicants from other kinds of backgrounds are able to cite many, many examples of much higher quality work experience. The quality of the work experience was the next thing I looked at. This is a kind of typical thing that I found in the sixth form college and comprehensive students database. I also have a part-time job as a drinks waitress, work in a big sports stadium in the Northwest. Even though it's my job, I look forward to the shifts. That second sentence, even though it's my job, I look forward to the shifts, captures the attitude that a lot of these applicants have. They don't see the job as something that's going to help them. They see the job as a negative, and they try and put a positive spin on it to make it more persuasive to the admissions tutors. On the other hand, from an independent school applicant, my extensive involvement in success and success in assisting my father in his international telecommunications company shows my ability to handle situations in the real world. Next summer I'm going to work to shadow the Pakistani ambassador to the United Nations in New York. And obviously I'm picking quite extreme examples here, but they are the personal chains are full of these examples, and they're not entirely unreflective by any means. Okay, one other thing that hints at is family networks, and family networks is something that I find cropping up in the data time and time again. It's basically social capital in Bourdieu terms. From an independent school student, my desire to study business and manager was primarily born, I think that's a spelling mistake, born whilst visiting my uncle in America, observing his aircraft brokerage and marketing company. My father's an entrepreneur who's created and sold a number of successive businesses, and I've therefore experienced the multifaceted world of business firsthand, watching and learning from my father, blah, blah, blah. I've achieved this through reading the financial press and spending time with my father and his business contacts. These family networks just aren't available to students from other backgrounds. And this has been noted before in the literature. There's a great article by Hatcher and Legale, 2008, who note that young people of higher SES utilise family contacts to access work placements and professional workplaces, and are much more likely to undertake responsible tasks and work shadowing, to be treated as a colleague and to receive mentoring in a professional context. And that's absolutely borne out by the data that I've been looking at. Okay, the relevance of the work experience. UCAS statement says you have to try and make it relevant. And one thing that I find is that the students from the less advantaged educational backgrounds really struggle to try and make this relevant. So you get things like, I'm working as a filing clerk at the local doctor's surgery, which helps me to stay focused. Or you get statements like, I worked at McDonald's for 6 months, which directly engaged me with people from all walks of life and all cultures. They're making an attempt to make it relevant, but it's difficult because this is low prestige, pretty low skilled paid work in a lot of cases. I undertook work experience both in an office and a local college. This one's interesting to me because that's quite good work experience. It's not working at McDonald's, but the student doesn't really know how to conceptualise it and articulate it in a way that might actually win them points on the UCAS personal statement. So the student's saying, it gave me a useful insight into the world of work. It demanded excellent time management, as I had to be punctual at all times, and that's a skill you need at university. Well, fair enough, but that's what a lot of students are doing. They see their work experience when they're writing their UCAS statement in terms of it gave them the discipline, got me out of bed, rather than things like this. My work experience from an independent school applicant provided an overview of retail management, and I saw how different departments work in unison to ensure the guaranteed growth of the business. I learned much about human interaction and diplomacy. I researched incentives offered by competitors, took part in designing samples. Consequently, the manager offered me a part-time sales position, which I held for 6 months. That developed my self-confidence, ability to learn quickly and accept responsibility. Subsequent work in a bank gave me an insight, opened accounts, shadowed cashiers, the language is right, shadowed, observed how managers worked effectively to secure new business. I had the opportunity to accompany managers to their meetings. So the difference isn't just in the quality of the work experience, so that's huge. It's also to do with how they're able to make it relevant to the course that they hope to study on. Okay, I did have a go at estimating the distributions of work. That's not an easy thing to do because what counts as a work experience and what doesn't, there is a grey area between the two, and some students from comprehensive schools might talk about work in the tuck shop in school and it's not really work experience, but I included them all the jobs, all the roles, all the visits to local factories, all the placements, all the volunteering, etc. And when I added them up, this is approximately what they came to. So with comprehensive school students, less than three, sixth form college, less than three, grammar school, no more, only about the same. And a bigger figure for independent schools, but maybe the difference wasn't quite as big as I expected. Once I started, though, to look at the work experience, the nature of the work experience more, what I found is that a continuum emerges, or a series of continuum emerge between the two different sets, those two groups. On one hand, sixth form college students and comprehensive students, and on the other hand, independent school students in particular. You get the difference between paid work and unpaid work. So for some kids, it's clearly a Saturday job. It's clearly something they do for money. And a lot of the work experience for other applicants is unpaid work, such as placements, internships, shadowing work. That correlates with a continuum between low prestige and high prestige, and also a continuum between low skills and high skills. The way I try to classify these different sets of jobs is in terms of well, different sets of work is in terms of jobs versus experience. And in practice, it's quite easy to tell them apart. Jobs, I have a part-time job in a local pub, part-time job at Shop Direct, two part-time jobs in the hotel and catering industry. I work an 8-hour shift on a Sunday and clean for 3 hours per week, versus experience. Under experience, I've included things like a 6-month commodities internship and gone. I mean, the pay thing muddies the water in a way, because presumably that person would be paid for doing a 6-month internship in Ghana, but it's clearly an experience rather than a job. The other two, from sixth form college applicants, volunteering work and shadowing a prosecutor. So there's a distinction one can make between jobs and experience. So what I did is broke down the figures I showed you before and counted up the proportion of times that each type of applicant cited a job or an experience. For comprehensive school applicants, it's broadly similar but favouring jobs slightly. For sixth form college applicants, the distribution becomes more skewed towards jobs rather than experience. For grammar school applicants, it flips, so they talk about experience and they're less likely to talk about jobs. And for independent school children, it flips completely, and we see a big reversal. Independent school applicants aren't talking about paid work, they're not talking about jobs, most of them don't mention money at all. When they're talking about work experience, what they're doing is talking about the high prestige placements, internships, etc. And that's a big difference between the educational backgrounds. How does that correlate to the survey I mentioned before? You remember that Anthony's team asked the question, did the work experience that you undertook help you get into university? The overall figures were 27% yes and 8% a lot. But if you break it down according to the three school types that the data talks about, independent schools, 42% are saying it helped them, 13% a lot. Grammar school applicants, down to 28%, and comprehensive school applicants, 25%. That's entirely consistent with the data from the personal statement. And don't forget, these are all students who actually had work experience to report. So it's not as though these figures are distorted by children at the comprehensive school not having work experience. This is a distribution from those who had an example of work experience, but the independent school applicants are better able to make the connection between work experience and university admissions. From the perspective of the school, there is some interesting research just beginning to emerge about how work experience operates in a school. So a paper by Huddleston and Mann has a teacher describing work experience at her independent school as, these kids are in the sweet shop, they've got it all, they can pick and choose. And she's talking about the alumni networks and the contacts and the parental influence that these students have. On the other hand, a study by Le Gallet quotes a head teacher at a comprehensive school in the Midlands saying, we have to be the parents for our pupils. Our pupils' parents aren't able or cognizant enough to play the game, and the children here make choices according to bus routes. What she's saying is that the intervention is entire. If the children were left to their own devices, they wouldn't have any work experience to draw on. Okay, that's the work experience material, but what I want to talk about next influences work experience quite a bit, because it's a commitment, goals and self-awareness and the different kinds of capital that are expressed in the personal statements. First of all, cultural capital. When they're talking about hobbies, the UCAS website advises them to talk about hobbies, and statements from a grammar school applicant. Hobbies include learning to play the piano, the violin, undertaking the Lambda examination since the age of 4. I take pleasure performing to public audiences. I did a cordon bleu cookery course at the Tante Marie School in London, so that's an independent applicant. Comprehensive and sixth form applicants aren't so good. Comprehensive student says, I try to follow Manchester United Football Club. I regularly watch Match of the Day and I enjoy the diversity of the Champions League. They don't know what to do. They don't quite know how to, well, they certainly don't know how to express cultural capital. But what they're doing is answering the prompt honestly. They're responding to the prompt, but they're not doing it in a way that's informed or guided. I love to listen to music. I listen to my iPod. A lot of them talk about their iPod. Economic capital, it's interesting to me to see how some of the applicants actually demonstrate their own personal wealth. So during a gap year, I did a ski season in Mirabel in order to gain better understanding of French. The student wouldn't be applying to do French, so the French signals cultural capital. The economic capital comes from having the money to be able to do this. I travel through Africa assisting locals on the way. And the last one. I witnessed firsthand the effect of poverty has on children. He's on tour with his rugby team. Through this, he was moved to sponsor a young girl in Romania. The response, I mean, the students are just saying what happened. The applicants are saying how they felt, but the response is very much underwritten by the wealth behind them. So there is economic capital at work. One thing I noticed, which I thought was quite unusual, is a kind of capital which I refer to as school-type capital. And the reason I picked up on this is because applicants from independent schools, these are all independent school applicants, they mention the name of the school in the personal statement. Now, there's no real reason to do this because it's obviously mentioned elsewhere in the application, but you get things like, since arriving at the name of the school, the school's economic society gave me the opportunity, since leaving the school in Oxfordshire, they name drop, basically. They know that their private school carries capital, so they name drop in the personal statement itself. And the distribution's amazing. Comprehensive students never do, almost never. Sixth form colleges never. Even grammar school students don't mention the name of their grammar school. But with independent school students, almost half the applications mention the name of their school. They must be being advised to do this. The kind of aspirations that are expressed are interesting to compare. A grammar school applicant says, it's my intention to continue to studies to master's level, perhaps also a doctorate. A lot of them talk about postgrad study. I wish to fulfill my goal of being at the forefront of the financial world. The comprehensive and sixth form applicants, they answer the question more honestly, but not necessarily in a way that admission choosers will find attractive. My ambitions are to have financial security, to live a comfortable lifestyle. My greatest goal in life is simply to succeed in whatever I choose to do and be as happy as I can be. That's one way to answer the question. The other way is to say, I don't know, I've got no firm ideas of what I want to do. You feel like saying, don't tell us if you've got no firm ideas. How people close a personal statement is quite interesting to me. The final sentence, a lot of the applicants from more educational privileged backgrounds, they end with a quote. So with Robert Bennett's earlier statement in mind, my personal belief is that as sure as a thriving business will follow successful management, an exhilarating career, personal prosperity will follow university. Yeah. And a Ronald Reagan quote, which I won't go into. Comprehensive school applicants, I look forward to you reading my application. I'd like to humbly request a place on the course. I can guarantee I'll be an excellent student, or, oh, this is the worst one, don't make a joke. I want to succeed in business, and I mean business. There's a clear lack of input and guidance, I think, for some of these applicants. So going back to my research questions, the first one I asked was, do personal statements differ according to the educational background of the applicant? And there is a big difference. The comprehensive and sixth form statements contain over four times as many quantifiable linguistic errors than statements from the other two school types. And the cultural, social and economic capital indicators vary enormously according to school type, again along the same lines. Comprehensive and sixth form college students on one hand and independent and grammar school applicants on the other. Second question, I wanted to know, how does school type correlate with the quantity and quality of work experience cited? In terms of quantity, independent school applicants are drawn on 55% more examples of work experience than applicants from any other background. However, the real difference is in terms of quality, because for independent school applicants, this job's experience ratio, which I've calculated and I'm interested in, it's about 1 to 6 for those. So 6 out of every 7 examples of work experience cited are good examples of work experience, so they're high paid placements and internship. Not high paid, high prestige placements and internships. But for the other two school types, the ratio is about 4 to 3. It's almost equal. You're getting almost the same, well, you get more jobs than experience cited. What does this mean? Hatcher and Legale, the article I mentioned before, they say work experience in school, as it operates at present, tends to reflect and reproduce existing patterns of social class inequality in the school system and the labour market. And I think I would add to this also maybe in higher education based on my data as well. I'm trying to make connections between this and what the Sutton Trust refer to as the 3,000 missing students from state schools who have the grades to attend the top dozen universities but who end up elsewhere. And I'm suggesting that maybe part of the reasons why there are so many missing students at the top university is because when it comes to the admissions process, they don't have as much input and guidance, and they don't have the quality of work experience to draw upon. Third question, would greater emphasis on the personal statements increase fairness in the admissions process, as some commentators have suggested? My answer has to be no, because the personal statement seems to reflect and possibly even exaggerate existing school-based advantages, such as work experience opportunity, as well as the academic advantages that come from going to an independent school or a grammar school. There seems to be a very strong correlation. Also, from the Schwartz report 2004, Schwartz makes the point, some staff and parents advise to the extent that the personal statement cannot be seen as the applicant's own work, which is quite a direct way of putting it. One thing I wanted to do with the data was put it through my university's plagiarism software just to see if there were any warning signs that emerged, but they wouldn't let me do that. They said that was immoral. Although it hasn't been picked up, there isn't much academic research, scholarly research. There are some media commentators who've picked up on this issue, the issue that I'm driving at. Certain applicants, says Barbara Ellen in The Guardian, middle class in good focus, mostly private schools, are much more likely to be able to speak uni, by which I mean decode the foreign language of the university admissions process. Meanwhile, less supported candidates stagger around in what amounts to a game of blind man's buff, unused to the terminology, struggling with forms, writing personal statements unaided, and almost all the indicators I've looked at would support those intuitions. Possible intervention points. There are three things which I think need to happen, perhaps, to increase the fairness in the system. The first thing we've got to look at is improving the opportunities for state school children to receive high-quality work experience, and that's probably the most important one. Point two, almost as important, is to help state school applicants recognise the value of their experience and express it appropriately. The literature and the political focus at the moment seems to be on giving them the experience, but they just don't know what to do with it in some cases. And in some cases, even when they've got good experience, their UCAS personal statement, it still represents that experience in fairly clumsy ways. The third recommend that intervention point is maybe to revisit these non-academic indicators, such as a personal statement, to ensure that they don't favour educationally advantaged applicants in the same way that academic indicators do. Just to expand on those three points quickly, this was the graph I showed you before about the difference between jobs and experiences. So how do you use this to improve opportunities for state school children? Well, one thing I noticed is that the high prestige experience in this column, it's sometimes overseen by the school, but the school aren't necessarily active in arranging the work experience. It mostly comes from social capital. It's the people that you know. They're drawing on family networks, on their families, business connections to get these experiences. And that contrasts very sharply with these two, where the comprehensive school applicants and the sixth form college applicants are drawing almost exclusively on activities which were enabled by the school or enabled by the college. And that connects to the quote earlier from the head teacher that says, you know, we have to be their parents for them. And this is an obvious area for more attention and more investment. And it's a big difference between the experiences cited by the different groups of applicants. Brown says, on the point of how state school students recognise the value of their experience, it's not Lord Brown, but another Brown says, applicants may feel themselves be composing in a rhetorical void in which they must write in an unfamiliar genre for an audience that they don't know and are unlikely ever to meet. And that comes through with a lot of the applications, of course. Not all students are in the same kind of rhetorical void. Some students are in a proper void, other students are in lesser of a void. And Diane Ray makes the point that the information received by low SES applicants is largely uninfluential or at times actively unhelpful. And sometimes you do wonder, when you're reading the applications from students from comprehensive and sixth form students, who influenced their application, whether they received any help, and sometimes whether the help they received was actually the right kind of help that they need. And remember, all of the applicants are of equal academic ability, so we can't attribute this to some applicants being more academically able than others. Point three, to revisit non-academic indicators. Again, something Schwartz said in his review, he recommended some 8 years ago structuring the personal statement through the insertion of course-specific prompts. So he said this free response statement isn't appropriate, and I would kind of agree with that. Consider replacing the free response statement with a series of character-limited fields. So, for example, if students were told that they would only be able to discuss one example of relevant work experience, which had to be either completed or ongoing, it couldn't be something that you do in the future. If they understood that, they could maybe prepare for that, and it would maybe stop some applicants. it would maybe stop some applicants from using a kind of scattergun approach when it comes to work experience and having maybe 10 or 12 different examples of work experience. And likewise, one key extracurricular activity would maybe level the playing field a little bit more. Directions for research, what I want to find out next, we need to find out how state school pupils approach, conceptualise and articulate their work experience. There's almost no research on this. Most of the research looks at the work experience itself rather than asks the state school pupils what they think of it and how they perceive it. And I think there's a real need for more research in that area. We need to look at other non-academic indicators, for example, the interview. What's the role of interviews for higher education, and do they actually increase fairness, or like the UCAS statement, might they actually decrease fairness in the process? And finally, the HE personnel involved in the admissions process and how they approach non-academic indicators. And there have been a couple of really interesting studies looking at admission tutors, including Anna's study recently. But I think we need to know more about who looks at these statements. If the people reading these statements are sufficiently clued up to be able to interpret all of this data in context and not be too impressed by the cookery courses and the cultural capital that's expressed, and they can see through that, then you could argue that the UCAS personal statement's appropriate. But my fear is that a lot of personal statements are read by administrators rather than academics, or if they are academics, they're very busy academics, and they're not really given the personal statements their full attention. Thanks for your full attention.